This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello and welcome to Powerhouse Politics. I'm ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl.
And I'm ABC News Political Director Rick Klein.
Rick, I'm coming to you from the White House. We've got Brian Stelter in the green room. He is the author of the runaway bestseller about Fox News called Hoax. We'll be talking to him shortly, and we have some political stuff to get to. But before we get to any of it, our chief executive producer, Trevor Hastings, just brought to my attention that we made the list, Rick, of the top 30 greatest podcasts on the planet from Parade Magazine. The title here is actually Top 30 Political Podcasts About Important Issues. So I guess it doesn't include the ones about the unimportant issues. But Rick, this is big. Top 30. And I quickly looked to it. I was like, what did we get? Did we get 28, 27? Where are we? Rick, not just top 30, top six. We're the number six. We are number six.
That is a great chant for us. We're number six. And it's because of listeners like you that thank you for talking us up to your friends.
Oh, my Lord. But also, I mean, we're ahead of some of the big guys. I mean, even our friends at 538, don't mention this to Nate. We're ahead of the Pod Save America guys, all this stuff. But I do say that my enthusiasm, I got a little worried when I was looking at this list. Thank you to the folks at Parade Magazine. The number one, do you know what it is, Rick?
What is it?
Making Sense Podcast with Sam Harris.
Sam, we're coming for you.
I'm not sure who Sam Harris is, but we're five below him. we're gunning for him. All right, so look, a lot going on. I don't think we need to belabor the Atlantic story. I do just want to make a point, Rick. Really two points. One is Jeffrey Goldberg is somebody who I have enormous respect for. I truly think he is one of the greatest journalists of our time. I mean, if you go back and you look at his interviews, people like King Abdullah of Jordan, his Obama interviews, he's a very thoughtful, very sharp guy. He's done the stuff he did with Mattis. I mean, he is, I think a very good journalist. So I don't question his journalism. But I do think that this story has been so eagerly accepted in many circles, non-Trump circles, that it's glossed over the fact that there are serious problems. The opening anecdote of this story is the one that got so much attention, that about the president's decision not to go visit that World War I cemetery in Paris 2 years ago. Interesting that it's coming out now, you know, less than 2 months before the election, but 2 years after it happened. But, it's a pretty vivid description of the president essentially describing people in that cemetery as losers or suckers. And it's anonymous. And we have now seen a dozen people who were on that trip, including many that were right there when the decision not to go was made, a controversial decision, which the president was criticized for at the time. And that the people saying that they never heard the president say that include, you know, people that you wouldn't expect would be running to his defense, like John Bolton, Zach Fuentes, John Kelly's chief of staff. I think that there is, there are reasons to be very skeptical of that report. Specifically, I think there may be other things in the article that are also quite devastating that might hold up better. But I think that the way in which our world has so eagerly held this up and taken it as gospel is a little bit of, you know, kind of gives you a sense of a kind of a standing bias to believe anything that paints Donald Trump in the worst possible light. And it's something that he's helped fuel that, you know, through his own behavior, no doubt. But But, you know, in any other case where you have a story, a devastatingly controversial comments made by a public figure sourced to anonymous sources, and contradicted by so many people who were actually, you know, with the president at the time, and those statements are on the record. I don't know. I find it a bit troubling.
Well, and I think you're right in pointing that out. I think a lot of folks have made the comment that well, certainly sounds like something the president would say. And that may be true, but that's not the same.
That's not a journalistic standard. Yeah.
It may be the standard that Trump sets for himself. Does anyone doubt that Donald Trump himself would be jumping on revelations like this about a political opponent? You know, we've got 8 weeks left. I'm sure there's going to be stuff that comes out about Joe Biden that is, you know, very sketchily sourced. That I don't think the Trump campaign is going to waste a second. But it does feel to me like this is among the bigger freakouts in Trump world that we've seen. Amid all of the revelations, all of the things, I mean, it's just the blizzard of stuff that flies by us every day on these beats, John. This seems like a big one. And it seems like this really stung the president, stung his campaign. He has spent a few days on defense, and it's a curious form of defense at times because he continues his feuds with John McCain, for instance, also with picking some new fights with Pentagon brass that seems curious, but yes, vociferous denials and an opportunity for Joe Biden. He has been re-energized by this and sure, probably stronger than he's been on any issue so far in this general election campaign in responding to the thoughts and statements that are attributed to President Trump in that article.
And some of the denials, some of the on-the-record denials are pretty narrow. I mean, we should say it's not, you know, and nobody can say it didn't happen, but you know, how do you, you know, you can't prove a negative, but they're all statements I didn't hear him say, like that's not the kind of thing the president would say. Zach Fuentes's denial was the most narrowly crafted, where he said, I didn't hear that, you know, the president didn't say that while we were talking about the weather. So I don't know, maybe other, I mean, they weren't, you know, because the weather, of course, was the reason he gave for not going. The helicopter couldn't fly. Anyway, the president kind of dug himself a little deeper, though, in his own defense on this, which you alluded to, by picking another fight with those in uniform. Take a listen.
I'm not saying the military is in love with me. The soldiers are. The top people in the Pentagon probably aren't, because they want to do nothing but fight wars so that all of those wonderful companies that make the bombs and make the planes and make everything else stay happy. But we're getting out of the endless wars.
I mean, this is an astoundingly awful thing to say about the leadership, the military leadership of the United States. By the way, a military leadership largely put in power by Donald Trump. These are his nominees, both at the Joint Staff and at the SecDef level and the other senior civilian leadership. And he's saying top people in the Pentagon probably aren't in love with him because they want to do nothing but fight wars so that all of those wonderful companies that make bombs and make planes and make everything else stay happy. That's what he said about his own military leadership almost 4 years into the job. Well, there was a response to that by the chief of staff for the Army, James McConville, who was doing a virtual event and was asked about it.
When I take a look at, you know, the senior leaders in the United States military, when I'm talking about them, I'm talking about generals, I'm talking admirals, I'm talking sergeant majors, you know, many of these leaders have sons and daughters that serve in the military. Many of these leaders have sons and daughters who have gone to combat or may be in combat right now. So, you know, I can assure the American people that the senior leaders would only recommend sending our troops to combat when it's required for national security and in the last resort. We take this very, very seriously in how we make our recommendations. And I think that's all I can really say on that. I feel strongly about that.
I mean, it's an extraordinary allegation to make, and especially when many of those military leaders have first of all, obviously, a senior leadership. Many of them fought in combat themselves, have in some cases lost sons or daughters, son in case of John Kelly, or seen their family members hurt badly in war, and suggest that they would do it just to help military contractors?
And people have pointed out, you know, Eisenhower warning about the military-industrial complex. To me, this is just a different tone and a different attribution of motives than that, because you're talking not about defense contractors and people who have a financial incentive in seeing the United States military deployed in major ways. You're talking about the motivations of the people that have given their livelihoods and in some cases the lives of their family members to the armed services. And look, the president wars with everybody. He's insulted senior members of the military, including people he's appointed. He's insulted Gold Star families very famously. As we mentioned, the late Senator John McCain is someone that he continues to feud with, even with McCain having passed away 2 years ago. But it is out of the ordinary, and I think this is not something that the president's advisors like for him to be saying. But it is part of what you see out of him, and at this stage, at this moment, it is a major distraction for a campaign that needs to get back on track. And the Atlantic article started this. The president's comments continue it. This is a president that has not had a lot of positive days on the campaign trail of late, and I don't think this week is an exception.
And he's out on the campaign trail again this week. It's really remarkable to see these events. He had two events on Tuesday. One down in Florida, which was not a campaign event. It was an official event. But it looked exactly like the event that was a campaign event later in the day in North Carolina. And the common thread here is a lot of people showing up and no social distancing, very precious few masks. And it's like, you know, the pandemic's not there. And the president was actually beaten up on the governor of North Carolina again, saying he hasn't moved to open up his state quickly enough. But I want to play one more clip, Rick, if you don't mind. This is the president in North Carolina trying to find a way to get at Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And he seems like he hasn't quite been able to figure out how to really land a punch on Biden. You know, he's gone at the kind of mental acuity argument. He's gone at the Hunter Biden thing, his ties to China. None of it's quite seemed to kind of hit the way his attacks on crooked Hillary did 4 years ago. So now he seems to be focusing particular wrath on Biden's running mate. Take a listen.
Nobody likes her. She could never be the first woman president. She could never be. That would be an insult to our country. By the way, you know who's further left than crazy Bernie? Kamala.
Come on.
Come on, Adit. First of all, he is intentionally mispronouncing her name. It's Kamala. She'll tell you, anyone will tell you, it is Kamala Harris, like the punctuation mark in a law. Period. End of story. He's getting it wrong on purpose. Listen, I always hesitate to ascribe particular motivations to particular turns of phrase, but it's hard for me to listen to that and not think that there are elements of racism in that particular attack. An insult to the country for her to become the first female president. This is a United States senator who is on the presidential ticket now. And again, the mocking mispronunciation of the name, we'll see if there's follow-up. But it's a reminder to me, at least, that this is a president that got his start with the birther movement against Barack Obama. And even when Kamala Harris's name was out there originally, or when she was first selected, the president, you know, at least talking about the possibility that she's not eligible to run for president. She likes to point out now that she was born in Oakland, California. No question about that. But that is we will see whether it's maintained, but I think that is a soundbite worth remembering for its pretty clear to me connotations.
Yeah. And I want to point out a piece of trivia to our listeners. If you look at Donald Trump's contributions over the years to Democrats, and as you know, he used to give money to Pelosi and Schumer and the Clintons and on and on and on back when he was giving money to both sides. But he stopped that, you know, a few years before running for president. If you go back and look, you will find that one of the last Democrats that he gave money to and several thousand dollars was Kamala Harris. Go back and look. It's all there in the FEC filings. It's all. So I don't know why he was like giving money. This was back when she was running for re-election as the Attorney General of California. All right, Rick, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back shortly with our guest.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome back to Powerhouse Politics. And before we get to our guest, Rick, I understand during the break you got some breaking news research on this Parade magazine, top 30 greatest podcasts that we have. We are right there, you know, right near the very top of that list. But you, I had referred to the number one podcast on the list, which was this a podcast with Sam Harris. I said I had never heard of him. I guess it sounds like I should have heard of him. Can you tell us what have you learned?
I'm a little intimidated. I Googled him, and I've learned, according to Wikipedia, that his work touches on things including rationality, religion, ethics, free will, neuroscience, meditation, psychedelics, interesting, philosophy of mind, politics, terrorism, and artificial intelligence. This guy's got a bunch of degrees. He's obviously a very smart man. I there's a picture of him with Neil deGrasse Tyson online. I am not worthy of being on the same level. I am intimidated by this man. I think he's in the wrong category though, because this is like someone that does, you know, real stuff, real work. I mean, these are long words that are unfamiliar to us in the, you know, in the yeoman's work of covering politics. I mean, neuroscience, ethics, artificial intelligence, psychedelics.
I mean, look. It says. Actually, I'm looking at this now, and it says that he tends to get to bigger truths about society and what it means to be human. Hey, Trevor, if you're listening, can we please book Mr. Harris for our next podcast? I would like to do a little cross promotional. See if we can get him. Interesting. And there's so much interesting stuff happening with psychedelics that we haven't touched on. 60 Minutes recently did an entire story on experiments with psilocybin, which was the same drug that Timothy Leary was experimenting in Harvard in the early 1960s. God, Rick, we're going to get on to this, okay?
You know, Donald Trump wants drug tests for. You know, he wants drug tests for the debates. He has said so.
Donald Trump wants drug tests.
Donald Trump wants, right? Yeah, not Sam Harris. I'm talking about Donald Trump. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to literally get on this. Is that what you're saying? We're not actually going to get on.
No, this, yeah.
We'll get on the case.
But we're going to tune in. We may not turn on, and we're not going to drop out, but we're definitely going to tune in. Now, that was a Timothy Leary reference. I hope you recognize that.
Duly noted.
All right, joining us now, we have Brian Stelter, author of the runaway bestseller book about Fox News hoax. First of all, Brian, congratulations. I saw that your book went to number one overall on Amazon. That is number one of all books, all types of books, paperback, hardcover, children's books, coloring books, fiction, nonfiction, number one overall. Huge success. Thank you for joining
us. It's no front row at the Trump show, but I'll just say this. I am grateful that I was able to launch before Bob Woodward's book and before Michael Cohen's book.
Your timing was perfect. You found perfect window.
But someone needed to tell this story. I really think one of the only untold stories left of the Trump years is this Fox relationship. We've talked about collusion for 3 years. Talk about collusion. It's right in front of us. Trump and Fox.
It really is something. And I want to see if you can get us to explain an aspect of that relationship that I think a lot of people either aren't aware of, or if they are puzzled. The president, from time to time, and I'm going to play a clip from just a couple of weeks ago, from time to time seems like he's going to war with Fox. Take a listen to this from August of this year.
Fox has changed a lot. They're probably turning off right now as I speak, but I don't care. I tell the truth. It's ridiculous. One of the biggest differences between this year and 4 years ago is Fox. Fox is like from a different planet, and too bad. And you know what's going to happen? If we don't win, they're going to go down the tubes along with every other media outlet. They'll all be bust. They'll all be gone. I can tell you that. Nobody's going to want to cover Sleepy Joe.
He does this, and he does it more frequently on Twitter. He lashes out at Fox. What is with that? And how do the people inside Fox react?
He doesn't want the news. He only wants the pro-Trump opinion. He only wants the propaganda on the air. And when he sees news on the air, when he sees Democrats speaking, when he sees news anchors reporting on some inconvenient scandal, he does lash out. It's a version of working the refs that we saw in 2015 and 2016, a version of working the refs where he complains about Fox's coverage. But it's more disturbing now because he is the president and he's using his presidential platform in order to bully news outlets. He bullies the CNNs and the ABCs more often. But yes, he does bully these news anchors at Fox. And the reaction from Fox is to ignore him, is to pretend it's not happening. And I think that's because they're caught between this rock and this hard place. They're caught between Trump and their viewers. And if they were to put out a statement saying the obvious thing, which is presidents should not attack news outlets, they would be ticking off their own viewers.
First of all, I mean, it's not maybe surprising, but the president actually gets it wrong in that clip we just played. 4 years ago, certainly during the primary campaign, Fox was often at odds with Donald Trump. And you remember, I mean, the only debate that, that Trump refused to take part in was a Fox News debate in Iowa. And I want to read, this is actually from another book, Front Row at the Trump Show, which we made reference to. but I talk a little bit about this in my book as well. And when they were going to battle over that debate, Fox came back and hit back. And let me read a little bit from this. This is a statement from Fox PR mocking Donald Trump. We learned from a secret back channel that the Ayatollah and Putin both intend to treat Donald Trump unfairly when they meet with him if he becomes president. A nefarious source tells us that Trump has his own secret plan to replace the cabinet with his Twitter followers to see if he should even go to those meetings. I mean, this is Fox not just responding. And then I was told that it was Ailes himself that dictated this, Roger Ailes had dictated this statement.
Yeah.
But the reason why I bring this up is I was fascinated to hear that your description of how Fox PR actually pretty aggressively tries to deal with reporters like you, media reporters, and wants to pitch stories about how, you know, they're doing, you know,
right,
newscast,
that's right.
Which never happened with Ailes, did it?
I think there's an attempt from Fox now to say, we have a news operation, don't forget about our journalists. This network is not all about Fox and Friends and Sean Hannity. So they will work overtime to make sure that bloggers and writers notice when Kayleigh McEnany is asked a tough question by a Fox anchor, or when Kellyanne Conway, before she left the White House, was held accountable in an interview. But those are the exceptions to the rule. You know, news anchors on Fox have far lower rated shows than the propaganda programs. People that watch Fox, they want the opinion. They don't want the news. And that's not just about Fox. That's about the state of the country and these separate information universes that we've been split off into.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how the president's relationship with cable news. He watches a lot. You know this. He watches your network, whether he admits it or not. He watches a fair amount of CNN. He watches a fair amount of MSNBC, a great deal of Fox, often on DVR. What's your sense of kind of the flow of information? Are the opinion anchors on Fox playing to that audience of one? Do you see kind of a give and take, a two-way street? How is the president consuming news, and how does that play into his interactions later with the press on the other side?
Right. I think he's reacting more to what he hears on Fox, sees on Fox, that then drives his Twitter feed, drives his day. It sometimes drives the rest of us in the media to react to what he has heard on Fox. And the country suffers as a result because we end up getting distracted. We end up, you know, with the pandemic, for example, the reason why my book is called A Hoax, I start and end with the pandemic and the dangerous downplaying of the disease early on. You know, I think this country collectively wasted a lot of time because the president would go down these crazy rabbit holes that he would hear about on Fox. You know, the conversations about reopening the country by Easter when, in fact, we were just starting to close. Conversations about hydroxychloroquine that were completely unhinged from the scientific reality, the medical reality. And this was all because he gets it from the television set. I think, you know, it's in a way, it's we've never had a situation like this before where he, it's not just that someone's informed by the TV. He's often misinformed by what he sees on TV. And that's at the root of many of the controversies and scandals that erupt in the Trump presidency.
Brian, what do you make of Fox's viewership numbers? They're staggering. They continue to be, it's the most watched thing on cable television by a long shot often, often throughout all of television. I years ago met with a Fox executive who explained their strategy in a very simple way that's always stuck with me. And he had a map of the United States and he put one arm over California and the West Coast and another arm over the East Coast and said, you know, you all, talking about ABC and the other networks and mainstream media, you all think about the people on the outside, you know, kind of to the right and to the left of my arms on the coasts. We're talking to everyone in between. And that image always stuck with me. And it you know, it's something that's powerful there that you know reflects the political map of the way that the President Trump was able to win the election in 2016. But it's not as if Fox is out there talking to some fringe of the country. There's a huge portion of the population that's watching this every day and you know believing it to some degree. So what extent do we as a country just have ourselves to blame for a phenomenon like this?
This is why I think it's so important to understand Fox's America and to understand why the content, why the shows are so appealing. You know, on an average day, you know, maybe 4 million people watch Sean Hannity's show. But Fox's real power comes from its reach over time. On an average month, at least 63 million people are going to watch Fox for at least a few minutes or more. And a lot of those folks are gorgers, not grazers. They're going to gorge. They're going to watch hours and hours a day. And they treat Fox like a way of life, you know, like an identity. Like a senior citizen center and a city hall and a you know, community building all wrapped up into one. For people to underestimate that or to ridicule that is a mistake because it is important to understand what's appealing about the network. Frankly, Trump is just kind of the prototypical viewer, right? An older white American male who has got a lot of grievances, a lot of bitterness, who feels like his country is fading away and expresses a backlash to a browning America. All those buttons that he pushes, Fox has been pushing them for years.
There obviously was an opening. And when Fox came on, the phrase was fair and balanced. And, you know, we report, you decide.
Yeah, there was definitely an opening in the marketplace for that.
And how much of that is because of a blind spot or weaknesses in our own coverage in kind of the non-Fox media, you know, universe?
Right. I think that is a factor. And I think it's fair to look in the mirror and recognize that. I think a bigger factor, however, is this decades-long attempt from the right to say the media is biased, the media does not have your interests at heart, the media is not just liberal but broken and can't be trusted. And that message from the 90s, which is mostly about media bias, and the 2000s, has turned into a message from the president and his allies to say the media is the enemy. And I think when you're told that every day, when you're told every day that the news could be a hoax, that people are trying to hoax you, trick you, fool you, hurt you, I think that has a real, real damaging effect that we can't quite even measure yet. It's kind of like a poison that's slowly moving through the body and starting to infect other parts of the American body. So I don't want to, there's certainly, you know, the media's self-inflicted wounds, focus on the coasts, you know, liberal leanings about certain stories. Those are all factors, but I've got to believe that the bigger factor has been this campaign to delegitimize the media.
You write about a lot of the Fox personalities, the anchors. You mentioned Sean Hannity. Tucker Carlson to me is just a phenomena that, you know, I think is always worth exploring. A lot of people think he's going to launch a career of his own in politics, maybe run for president. What do you make of Tucker and his influence at this moment? Hannity may be channeling, you know, Trumpism more strongly, but it feels like you see a lot of Tucker Carlson in how the president is reacting. And Tucker is, you know, become a highly watched big star for, even though he's been very familiar on the media landscape, he's reached another level.
He absolutely has. And if I was writing this book now and I was finishing it now instead of 3 months ago, I would have been including a lot more about Tucker. He has taken off in recent months, outrating Sean Hannity from time to time. And his impact in the Trump White House is becoming more and more clear. For example, last week when the president announced this sudden end to racial sensitivity trainings in federal agencies, that was straight from Tucker Carlson's show three nights earlier. There was an immediate reaction from the White House when Tucker vaulted this story, which had been in pro-Trump media on the web, but he put it on TV in front of 4 to 5 million people, and it suddenly became an issue on the president's mind. And by Saturday, Trump is tweeting about it 20 times. That, you know, is just one of illustration of Tucker's power. I also think Tucker is thinking beyond 2020 in a way that maybe nobody else at Fox is. When I watch Tucker's show, I hear, you know, this, I don't know if you're going to think I'm crazy. I hear 2024 campaign monologues. That's what I sometimes hear him doing. He's thinking about what is the post-Trump GOP.
He is somebody who will go against the president from time to time. He has on the on Syria, and then I was amazed during the Republican convention that on the first day of the Republican convention, he didn't take it. He didn't take the kickoff. He just did his show and got a lot of blowback. And then after that, he basically did for the next three nights. Looking to the future, what would it take for Fox to turn on Trump? I mean, if we get into a situation where Trump is contesting the election results, and you know, does Fox go all in with that, or does Fox at one point, you know, kind of pull the plug? And what impact would viewers revolt, or would it sink Trump?
I have asked that exact question to some of my best sources at Fox. And I don't think I've had a great answer from anyone. I don't think anyone knows what early November looks like on Fox News. And I think it's incumbent on Rupert Murdoch, Lachlan Murdoch, and the CEO of Fox News Media, Suzanne Scott, to be responsible and to recognize the power that they have with this platform. Because, you know, we know how it's going to work on election night, at least. We know that it'll be Brett Baer and Martha McCallum and the news side at Fox that will run the show. That's how election nights always work. Of course, you know, you look around, they've got these great decision desk staffers, really strong professionals at Fox who know how to call races and project outcomes. But what will happen if the news side is saying one thing and the propaganda side is saying another thing? What if Sean Hannity, you know, is out there saying that the election was rigged and then it was stolen? The network will have a profound responsibility in those days if that is the scenario that we find ourselves in November. And I think we have to start raising that question now. And I think for media reporters, including yours truly, we need to be asking Fox these questions and see if they will respond. They usually don't answer these kinds of questions, but we have to ask because it is going to have Fox has a huge responsibility in November.
In the second part of that question, do you think if they did kind of pull the plug and, you know, did not defend the president on that and went with the news side as opposed to the propaganda side, as you say, who gets hurt more in that scenario, Trump or
right.
Fox?
Right. Well, I think I'm of the view that Fox has a monopoly position, you know, and that other right-wing channels, the Newsmaxes, the One American News channels, they have barely any audience compared to Fox. Most Fox viewers don't even know where to find those other channels. I think Fox has tremendous power from that point of view. But there's also this sense of fearing their audience. I had a longtime commentator there say to me, the audience has been radicalized. I had a veteran staffer say, I feel like Fox is being held hostage by its audience. And that is exactly the wrong attitude, the wrong approach to have. You shouldn't fear your audience. You should serve your audience. Serve them the truth.
Well, that's a perfect note to end. Congratulations again on the success of Hoax. Highly recommended reading going into this campaign season. We didn't even get a chance to talk about OAN and the like, so we'll have you on again. But thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, that is all the time we have for Powerhouse Politics. Thank you to Trevor Hastings for showing up back here at work. It's great to have you back, man. And Avery Miller, our entire team. We will be back next week.